This is Building Bridges, produced and hosted by Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
Sounds from a rally about and a discussion of Mayor Bloomberg's snow job on public school education in New York City.
That word snow's become a dirty word and is applicable in this situation to the mayor's policies on so many issues. Well, we're going to begin by listening to highlights from the Stop the Schools closing rally, and then we've got some educators and educatees in our studio to pick up the discussion, because we have 24 more schools that are slated to be closed. We've already lost 92, and enough is enough. So let's go to the rally.
Money for public education,
not for private corporations.
Money for public education,
not for private corporations.
Whose schools? Whose schools? Let's hear it for Lamy Hameson, Class Size Matters.
Parents are angry. Teachers are furious. Students are furious. Not that our schools are failing, but that the DOE and the mayor have failed at their jobs. From co-locations to overcrowding to kindergarten wait lists to increasing class sizes, they are doing everything they can to undermine the health and stability of our neighborhood public schools so they can privatize and put charter schools in their place. At the city council hearings, council members lit into the DOE and said, why aren't you giving these schools a chance to improve? Why don't you let them reduce class sizes at Jamaica or Kennedy? After all, isn't that what the small schools are doing? Yesterday was revealed that the DOE can predict within a few percentage points exactly what graduation rates are going to be, depending on how many overage students they send to these schools. And yet, instead of sending them more and more every year, when a school starts to decline, they push more in these kids into the schools, causing them willfully to fail. There are also several schools on the closing list that for years parents and teachers complained about their principals, about mismanagement, fraud, and corruption, and the DOE did nothing to stop it, and now they are trying to close the schools. These schools are filled with poor and disadvantaged children, and closing their schools just adds more disruption and more instability to their lives. This mayor has failed to deliver for the students of this city.
Do we have Kim Irby here?
It seems that New York City Department of Education has decided that they know what's best for our children. And we know that they have failed every child in New York City. We know that the resources for our children are being redirected to the no-bid contract, that they have stolen quality education from our children here in New York City. This is not the model that we accept today. I do stand on behalf of a closing school in my district, in District 13, MS 571, that was starved of resources, that network leaders did not work to assist my teachers, did not work to assist my special ed students in that school, and now they decided that they should close that particular school in my district, placing a charter school as a new option. The Prospect Heights community has been relentless. They presented 1,000 signatures this week at their public hearing saying no to that particular school. So to the mayor and to our unqualified chancellor, I hope that they recognize what the community has said. They said no to Brooklyn East Charter School. We say no to privatization of any more schools in our district. The destiny is to turn around the schools. The destiny is to fix what is broken. But only we as a community, if we come together and make that decision, we are the ones that are going to have to make that true change in our communities.
Thank you, Kim Irby. I'm going to present to you now Leo Casey, Vice President of the High Schools UFT.
Mayor Bloomberg announced that it was his intention to close 200 New York City public schools before the end of his term. Before he knew one thing about how schools were performing, he had decided that he would close 200 public high schools and elementary schools and middle schools. Then, in order to do that, he changed the way they calculate the school progress reports. So 7% will turn up D's and F's every year, no matter how they perform. This week, the Independent Budget Office confirmed that there is a deliberate policy to concentrate high-need students, English language learners, students who are homeless, students who are living in poverty, to concentrate them in schools in such high numbers that those schools find it impossible to serve all their needs. When you concentrate those students and you starve those schools of the resources and the supports they need, you have set them up for failure. This policy of mass school closures is a policy that depends upon failure. It's a policy that wants failure. And it's time for us to say, fix our schools, don't close them.
Fix our schools. Fix our schools. Folks, there was a hearing at Brandeis 2 days ago, and all the speakers from the school and the community there spoke out about how unjust an Eva Moskowitz charter school in there. It was unanimous that there should be no charter school in this high school, putting children, four-year-olds, five-year-olds, with high school students. It just doesn't make any sense. Next speaker from Community Education Council 3, Vice President Christine Anicino.
I just want to make this perfectly clear. This issue is all about segregation. I'm from District 3. We have a school called PS 149 up there, Sojourner Truth. And when those kids came back to school in September, you know what happened to them? There's two gyms in that school. There's one very big, very beautiful gym, and there's a smaller gym. Guess what gym they were in when the charter school came in? The smaller gym. Guess what else? When they went up to the third floor, their normal classrooms, they only had one classroom up there. So when the Ramon had to go to the bathroom, where did he have to go to the bathroom? Did he go on the third floor, the newly renovated bathroom? No! No, he didn't. He had to go downstairs to his old dilapidated bathroom. At PS 241, you know what happened to those kids when they came back to school? Did they go to the first floor for their classrooms? Did they go to the second floor for their classrooms? No, siree. They went to the basement. They saw all the charter school kids go up the stairs, go into their newly renovated classrooms. Do we think that's fair? No. In District 3, what we're trying to tell the DOE and Eva Moskowitz and all those so-called education companies that label themselves as charter schools, you know what we're telling them? We're telling them to stop the squeeze. Stop squeezing our kids. Stop squeezing our most neediest kids. Stop squeezing everybody. It's great to see everybody out here at the PEP meeting. When we go, we're expecting to see that they're going to keep the charter schools out. You know why? Because every single public school in District 3, every single council person, assembly person, the community board 7, everybody has written a statement saying stop these charter schools. So we expect on Tuesday that there's going to be democracy just like this building promises, and they're going to stop the squeeze.
Stop the squeeze!
Stop the squeeze!
Hey, hey! Ho, ho! Black and blue!
And you were listening to some highlights from the Stop the Schools closing rally. Mayor Bloomberg's Department of Education plans to close 26 more schools this year. despite the DOE's claim that these schools' closings are aimed at reforming schools. They have instead opened the door to privately run charter schools and have limited school options for those affected. According to the accounts by parents and students and teachers, DOE policies have had the effect of undermining the schools that are slated to be closed, not fixing them.
Bloomberg is playing a shell game with our most vulnerable children, shuffling them around from closing school to closing school. This process has disproportionately affected students of color, only serving to further perpetuate a separate and unequal system of schools in New York City. Now a discussion with members of Paul Robeson High School's community about quality resources and support for our public schools, not closings and privatization.
We're joined by Stephanie Siegel, Luana Howard, and Letitia Ingram Brown, all teaching personnel at Paul Robeson High School, which is my favorite name of any school in the city, got to tell you that. And, of course, a student who is fresh out of a rather disturbing meeting, and you are?
My name is Elizabeth Cooper, and I also go to Paul Robeson High School.
You came in and you have a bright and gorgeous smile now, and I can't think of anything more than what youth represents, which is potential and possibility. Well, you just came from a meeting with the Department of Education. Tell us about that, because that kind of sets me on. I'm mad tonight. It's keeping me on that track. What happened?
Well, we went to the meeting, me, also two other students from Paul Robeson High School, the president and the vice president of Paul Robeson High School, Nigel Hill and Daquan Hughes. We sat at the meeting and we were supposed to meet with Mark Stanberg, the deputy chancellor. This was about the phasing out of the school and the ideas set for it, and what do we have to say about it, and what things do we want to keep, or like a compromise somewhere in the middle.
Well, that sounds great. So you were meeting with some highbrows.
So yeah, it sounds great, but it's different when they say, okay, give us your ideas and what do you want to happen, but it's different when you give them your ideas, but it's like, okay, it's set, the phase out is still going to happen. So it's like, what's the point of us giving you our opinion?
And the meeting took an hour, 2 hours?
It took a good 2 hours, 3 hours, but we were there to meet the deputy chancellor, Mark Stanberg. We thought he wasn't going to show, and it was Alex Shubb there, his assistant. Mark actually came, but it was only there for a good 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and then he left. So his executive basically took down the notes, and we began to talk on ideas. So, yeah.
So that sounds kind of disappointing.
What are your ideas about? What are your feelings? What are the feelings of the majority of students at Robeson about the closing? What were you going to tell him?
Well, us as the students, we told them that we feel that the phase out for Robeson is not a good idea. We, in our opinion, we felt that Robeson could have been way better off with a transformation and improve, which other schools have been given a transform and improve. And we're like, why haven't Robeson been receiving that? And we've done better than some of those high schools that has been given a transform and improve. And also, a statement that I made was, what happens to our school when the phase-out process does go out? What happens to those students if resources and stuff is taken away? What happens to those students who won't be able to receive AP classes that the seniors now have, which the freshmen may not have? What happens to those students who may not graduate on time? Like, it's like a lot, I guess.
Okay, tell us about this. What is it, transfer and approve?
Well, there's four models.
Stephanie?
There's four models that the state has that for schools that have been put on the low-performing list. It's a state list, right? And it's all connected to the race to the top. So there are four models. One is a phase-out. One is turnaround. One is transformation. And the turnaround and transformation models require changing in staff, and they have to be negotiated with the union. But what we discovered is that there are four other high schools that are similar to Robeson in terms of their demographics to some extent, and Maxwell, Sheephead's Bay, John Dewey, and Boys and Girls. And we have either performed better than those schools on the statistics, the data that the DOE uses to determine whether to phase out a school or not. So we've either performed better or the same. And those schools are all getting the other models to recover. So we have actually started pursuing our own recovery model anyway, because we want our school to be the best it can be, regardless of whatever is going to happen here. But we will continue to fight this, and we feel that the DOE has not responded to that reality that these other schools are getting this other choice.
Letitia and Luina, I before we even go to the models and what could or should be done, I find it hard to understand why our children are not doing better. Or maybe I don't. I have my own thoughts on it. But you're in a school like Paul Robinson. There's community involvement. There's bright, smart parent community body. You have wonderful students like our young sister here. What's wrong to begin with? Or is there anything wrong? And is what's happening with the school closings something else about privatization and not really about education at all? I don't know. Help us sort that out.
Well, we have to definitely assess that it's clearly not about education. The city used to utilize this term children first. It's clearly not children first. It's clearly not including community because the city makes its decisions and community finds out after the fact. The city made a decision to put another school into the building and didn't inform the community. So the community finds out afterwards. It was the New York Times who made us aware that another school was coming into our building. Now, we're the educators who work there Monday through Friday, some of us Saturdays and Sundays. Our kids come in regularly, 8:30, some 8 o'clock, stay until 6, 6:30 with the extended day programs on the weekends. And yet the community and the parents were not made aware. They have to find out their information through the newspaper. It's unfair to the parents. It's unfair to the community. It's clearly a slap in the face and a total disregard, as if the community doesn't matter.
But they're still saying our kids don't learn, so we have to do something dramatic and drastic.
Is it really that our kids don't learn, or do they not learn in the time window that has been allotted? The city decided to put a whole bunch of kids who have one. We have a large population of special needs. I love our kids. Our kids are very successful on their own. We have a lot of kids who are coming from transient households, all types of issues. And yet, the city says, just as you guys have mentioned, they close one school, send these kids to another school. Therefore, they become what is known as they're overaged, they're LTAs, long-term absences.
Long-term absences.
Now, if you're absent from one school, what makes me think you're going to go to the new school? That's not going to happen. Realistically speaking, there is no other plan that the city put into place for these children. And so these students are the ones who suffer.
The other issue is the way when children come in that are overaged and undercredited, they are now a part of your cohort. And a cohort tracks a student from the 9th grade to the 12th grade. So if you have a 17-year-old coming in with 10 credits when it's required 43 to graduate, based on their age, you're supposed to graduate them with their class. So they're coming in as a senior with 10 credits, and you're supposed to graduate them with their class. That creates a problem. And the thing is, they are now in your denominator. So if you started with 200 kids to graduate, now you have 201. And they all travel in that four-year group. And so knowing that this child cannot graduate in 4 years, you become penalized for that. If we get a child in our building, we're going to graduate that child. It may not be in the 4 year period, but definitely that child is going to graduate from the school. As long as they're coming to classes, because we have the dedicated teachers that are going to do the job to get them to graduate. But to send a child in, already a senior with 10 credits, and say they must graduate with their class and turn around and don't give resources, then you penalize us for that. And so that's what happens with the 4 year graduation rate.
Stephanie, the Independent Budget Office of New York City issued a report recently saying that the schools that are in trouble have a higher proportion of students who need more attention, need more resources than the other schools. Is that the case in Robeson, or is there something else going on here?
No, it's very much the case. I mean, what started happening when Bloomberg and Klein came in with a small school movement is that the larger schools got closed down, and the small schools, when they were first opened, could cream the students that they wanted to take. So they took primarily girls, because they're easier to educate, and they took students with higher profile from junior high. So the other schools, the schools that were left standing, like Robeson, became dumping grounds. And there's nothing wrong with those children, but just like what Luina was explaining, is that you're penalized, the school is penalized for the child because of the deficits that they might come with just because of other lacks in their home life, in whatever circumstances have enabled them to maybe stay out of school and become 17 with 10 credits. In that report you refer to, we have the highest population of overaged and undercredited.
And by the way, we should say that Paul Robeson is... It services Brownsville, East New York, and Bedford-Stuyvesant.
And Crown Heights.
And Crown Heights. Mm-hmm.
So it's when that whole policy started of the small schools, we became indignated. And our population, another thing the DOE likes to say about us is that we're no longer a popular choice. And they use statistics that our numbers have been going down. Well, in 2005, we were up to 1,500 students.
1,600.
And the school is built to handle 1,000. At most. So we were a third over what we should have been. And it was causing the way students select a school now also has negated something that used to go on that made Robeson a really community school, is that a parent could say, oh, my child had a really great career at Robeson. I want my son, my daughter, my... And it's we don't have that kind of control over who comes in and who leaves the school now in the way that the application process is. And we also, so there's also a mixing up of gangs that didn't happen before that caused a lot of incidents in our school during that time period when we were overcrowded. So we had to, our principal at the time made an issue of trying to get the incoming classes capped so that our population could go back to a size that we could handle, which would be around 1,000 kids, which has happened. And again, the DOE likes to use that as an example that we're not a popular choice.
I just don't get it. Resources certainly are needed. Smaller classrooms are better. But we had public schools that had large numbers of kids. And I came out of the CUNY system, which I think is phenomenal, and got a smashing education. Is it that children are looked at as chattel, really, as commodities, as products? Is this about consumerism, really? Is it about not really understanding in any way in the recent years what the nature of education is?
That definitely is it. From what we look at and utilizing resources, resources seems to be a word that people throw around quite frequently. You throw around resources, you claim that you're giving it to them, and yet realistically when you start truly looking at the numbers, do the resources really get to where they need to, which is the student? They do not. Most of the time, they don't get them. Half the time, if they get something, it's for a small period of time, and then all of a sudden, the program changes. It's something else. We're not allowing our students the opportunity or the time that they need to acquire whatever skills they must acquire, and yet they're still expected to graduate within a time frame.
What about the issue of race and the issue of class?
Oh, classism is a definite. You can see it across the board from one end of the city to the other end of the city. You can definitely see how classism has affected it, as well as race. Race has always had some sort of play, specifically because in this city, we all group ourselves together outside of that. But then when you start looking at classism, the poor communities are the ones that are usually first targeted in reference to closing. But yet it's the DOE's fault. If they would have given those students in those schools what they originally needed, instead of filling a school over to over capacity, if you would have given them the additional manpower, that's what they needed. We needed manpower. We didn't need anyone to tell us, okay, you know what, you need a new program. No, we need a body right now. We need somebody to stand in front, to help us go through the trenches, to step into the classrooms, to assist our struggling students, to definitely help to really intervene.
So what's our platform for demanding why Paul Robeson should stay open?
Paul Robeson's statistics definitely tell us that they have improved. With it, we didn't have a principal for a long period of time. They removed the principal in the middle of the school year, and yet our students still excelled. Literally, mathematically, they went up 75%. That's on the state examinations that the state was giving. So the data is not being made up. It's according to the New York City's DOE system. You can find it online. Mathematically, they went up. In writing, in the English language arts regions, they also went up. So the data was there, and they did it within a six-month window.
Actually, they did it in less than 6 months.
This is right.
We did it in a four-month period.
Our graduation rate went up 10 points last year in those 4 months. And I think that one of the things that is part of that recovery, well, there are three ways that we're approaching this. One is the comparison that we mentioned before. So why isn't Robeson being offered another model? Gotcha. And then the other is that the DOE in its educational impact statement on our school makes a lot of claims that are not true, that it gave us all of this different intensive support. And that we had been failing for 10 years, which is not true. And we've responded to all of that in a 30-page document where we detail what did happen at the school over the last few years. And we also have leadership issues. We have not had appropriate leadership for some time, and we don't have it now. We have a principal who's not able to really lead the school in an urgent crisis situation. She doesn't have that kind of experience, and it is really causing us a lot more problems. And that needs to be directly addressed.
And me as a student from Pearl Robeson, I've really wanted to stay open why, also because of the opportunities that it has given me, as well as other students in the school. The president of our school now has won a Posse scholarship and will have a fully paid college except for room and board. Also, me, I'm on the panel for education, sitting next to the chancellor and the deputy chancellor and everyone. So it's given a lot of students opportunities that any other high school would not have. And that's why I truly want Robeson to stay open.
You know, so I think that's our job, to make communities aware that that's what's going on, and for them to come alive and be aware and make a stand and let their voices be heard.
If you look at it, not all small schools actually are successful. Some are closed.
There's a vote tomorrow?
Yes, there is. There's a PEP meeting scheduled to happen at Brooklyn Tech. It starts at 6 o'clock.
PEP?
I'm sorry.
Panel for Education.
Policy.
Do we all need to be there and say yes?
Yes, we do. Everyone needs to be there.
Everyone there to support
us. When the rally actually starts.
We've got to keep our schools open. We've got to prevent the privatization. We've got to prevent our children being looked at as really, really, really chattel. Consumers, products, that's how they were referred to by Klein. That's how they're referred to by Kathy Black. We've got to retake control of our schools and make them the real inspirational cultural edifices that they can be, so that our youth inherit the future and bring us along. And particularly when we have such bright and lovely people like Lizbeth Cooper. So you're going to make it happen, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to thank Luena Howard and Stephanie Siegel and Letitia Ingram Brown and particularly Lizbeth Cooper, our future.
Keep on fighting. Keep on fighting.
That's right. We don't have to look too abroad. We have to support abroad, and we have to do some serious, serious struggling here.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.